You know what goes well with chocolate? Hostility.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Kraft Foods turned hostile today in its bid for the British chocolatier Cadbury. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is following all this in London, and he joins us live. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Now, Stephen, Kraft made an informal bid for Cadbury back in September. That got rejected. This offer is for less money than the first one. How does that happen?
Because Kraft is offering a mixture of cash and shares, and Kraft shares have declined since September. Its latest figures have been pretty disappointing, and so Kraft shares have dipped, making this offer worth less.
But then why didn't Kraft have to work to raise its bid? I mean, the first offer was rejected for being too low. Why didn't Kraft offer more?
Well, Kraft itself is under pressure from its own investors not to overpay for Cadbury. In particular, Warren Buffett, who has a stake in Kraft, has made it clear that $16 billion or so is probably about enough money for the British company. Kraft had to table this official bid today, before the end of today, in fact, under British takeover rules. If it hadn't, it would have to walk away from the bid and not come back for 2 days. So it seems that the deal here, for 6 months that is, it seems the deal here is that it is making an official bid. It'll now sit back and see whether any rival bidders enter the fray.
And are there any other signs of rival bidders?
None so far. Some people say Nestle or even Unilever might join in, but none so far. This is going to be a very interesting one to watch.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard, live in London. Thank you.
Okay, Bill.
Now, in other chocolate news, the dairy industry starts a new ad campaign today that is not going down well with some health activists.
I raise my hand for chocolate milk because it's a delicious way for my children to get the 9 essential nutrients that their bodies need to grow healthy and strong.
So this ad has a mix of celebrities and nutritionists telling you if you put chocolate in it, kids will drink more milk. To which critics respond, yeah, kids will drink chocolate milk if you give them the choice, so don't. Okay, now, got numbers? Both European and Asian stock markets are higher this morning. Leaders of the rich G20 nations met over the weekend in Scotland and agreed to keep those stimulus programs pumping. Last week was a cheerful one on Wall Street. All the big indices swelled more than 3%. So for the Dow, it was a 311-point week. The Friday close was 10,023. Cutting-edge technology companies will be watching the Supreme Court closely today. The justices will hear arguments in a case that asks what kind of innovations can be patented. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has that.
10 years ago, a Pittsburgh company tried to patent a way of trading commodities contracts. But the U.S. Patent Office decided it didn't fit the definition since it wasn't a new machine or transformative process, and the Court of Appeals agreed. But Mike Jakes at the Finnegan Law Firm says the company had good grounds for appealing to the Supreme Court.
The real question is this an abstract method or not? And we don't believe it is because it's an actual method that can be used to manage consumption risks in a commodity market.
But Stephen Schreiner, a patent attorney with Goodwin Procter, says that innovation was more an idea than an invention.
So the court's view was that applicant was trying to patent this broad concept of hedging using contracts.
Lots of high-tech companies worry a narrow patent definition will jeopardize their rights to idea-based products like software or even pharmaceuticals. They're hoping the Supreme Court rules in their favor next spring. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, offering the ability to manage money, credit, and loans all in one place, LendingTree.com. American Public Media presents Workplace You, an American Radio Works documentary supported by the University of Virginia's Batten Institute. More at AmericanRadioWorks.org.
So far this year, 115 American banks have failed, and experts think there are plenty more to come. So how can you tell how your bank is doing? Well, one predictor is the so-called Texas ratio. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports this is one test where getting a high score is a bad thing.
To calculate the Texas ratio, you take the bank's non-performing loans and divide that number by the tangible equity capital plus money set aside for future loan losses. Are you confused yet? Bart Narder follows Banks for Celent, a consulting firm. He has a simpler way of explaining it.
It's essentially bad stuff divided by good stuff.
Put that way, it's easy to see the logic. The more good stuff you have on your books, the better shape you're in. When the ratio of bad stuff to good stuff is around 1-to-1, the bank is more likely to fail. And there are plenty of banks whose Texas ratios are right around there. Georgia has the most because banks there were overexposed to bad real estate, but Florida, Illinois, and Minnesota are all well represented. Narder says it's important to realize a bad ratio doesn't guarantee failure.
It's a ratio like many other ratios that should be used as a guide. It is a reasonable snapshot. It does not predict the future.
And there's a twist. The ratio's accuracy depends on banks reporting their own losses.
That number is subjective. You sort of have to guess at that one.
David Beim is a finance professor at Columbia.
And there are banks that do that conservatively, and there's banks that do that less conservatively.
He says it is possible for a bank to be too honest. If they report tons of bad loans and rack up a high score, their Texas ratio could turn into a self-fulfilling prophecy. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
In company news this morning, McDonald's said monthly sales were flat in the U.S., stronger around the world. Dish Network said profits fell 13% last quarter. Part of that was an expensive patent fight with TiVo. And finally, why does a papaya need a sex change? Well, glad you asked. A papaya plant comes in three genders, male, female, and hermaphrodite. And only the hermaphrodite makes the tasty fruit. Problem is, hermaphrodite seeds don't always produce hermaphrodite plants, and you can't tell what you've got until it grows up. So the farmers have to plant a whole bunch of seeds just in case. Waste of water, waste of fertilizer, waste of money. So now this University of Illinois plant biologist has a $3 million National Science Foundation grant to make a hermaphrodite papaya that only makes other hermaphrodite papayas. Opponents of genetic modification say this is dangerous. Papaya farmers say they will be passing the savings on to you. This is Marketplace Morning Report. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.